got a sprain or an itch. Pain, rash, swelling, or twitch. Call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. Call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
COVID-19.
It's been over a year since we first heard the term COVID-19. For a long time, as the pandemic spread and created what seemed like social as well as economic upheaval in most countries around the world, we all felt as if we were in a never-ending tunnel in a dark cave, never to be normal again. However, with the advent of the vaccines, many of us see the light at the end of that tunnel.
Can we get back to what we might call a normal life, or will life be permanently changed due to the pandemic?
There were many lost jobs, lost businesses, and lost good times. How about our health? We all hope that those who survived the pandemic will be able to return to the pre-pandemic lifestyle that we all lived. But there appears to be many who have been affected by the virus at one time or another during the pandemic.
Many had no symptoms, some had mild to moderate symptoms, and others had symptoms severe enough to be hospitalized, while many passed away, either as a direct or indirect cause of the viral infection.
As we said, acute COVID-19 infections range from no symptoms to life-threatening. But what about long COVID? That's the symptoms occurring more than 3 weeks after infection. This has also been called the post-acute COVID syndrome. So could there be thousands of people, maybe even millions, with mild, long COVID who just don't know it?
Could there be many with no low energy levels, possibly being misdiagnosed as depressed, stressed, having a sleep disorder, or being labeled lazy?
A clue to this could be a person's inability to tolerate a glass of wine or a bottle of beer. We mentioned the term long COVID. Well, it represents at least four different syndromes, including those that result from organ damage or an ICU stay. But there's one particular syndrome called post-viral fatigue syndrome with the acronym PVFS.
It is the only one that causes alcohol intolerance without organ damage. The sign or symptom called alcohol intolerance simply refers to the inability to process alcohol.
The symptoms include nausea, low blood pressure, fatigue, and dizziness. But the key here to diagnosis is that there is sudden onset in certain patients, those without liver disease or medication reactions, that demonstrate this alcohol intolerance. Now, chronic fatigue syndrome also shares this intolerance. One patient stated that he routinely had a beer or a glass of wine at dinner, but then something changed. As he started drinking his first beer during quarantine, he could not tolerate even more than 2 to 3 sips. By the second or third sip of alcohol, he felt a not-so-great buzz of lightheadedness, sluggishness, and queasiness.
Others have said that with long COVID, there has been an onset of fatigue, muscle aches, muscle twitches, headaches, and problems thinking following documented cases of COVID-19.
Energy levels can decrease by about 50% of normal, even 9 months after the initial infection. Right now, there is no specific test for long COVID, but more and more physicians are becoming familiar with its symptoms.
So, without a recognized test, we can think about it if you find that taking those first sips of any alcoholic beverage causes the symptoms of alcohol intolerance, and this may help identify the culprit.
Well, this is March, and it's Colorectal Awareness Month, so why should we care? We'll get into that in a moment, but there is a new non-invasive test available for persons with average risk of colon cancer. Now, you may be thinking, big deal. There's been the non-invasive toilet test for blood in the stool for years.
Well, it is a big deal, especially for those 45 years of age and older.
Cologuard, pretty much like pregnancy tests, for the most part, are not quantitative. They only give you one of two results, positive or negative. Now, Cologuard is intended for the detection of colorectal neoplasia, associated DNA markers, and for the presence of occult hemoglobin in human stool.
That is what makes it different from previous tests that only look for the presence of occult hemoglobin in the stool.
A positive result may indicate the presence of either colorectal cancer or advanced adenoma and should be followed by diagnostic colonoscopy. Cologuard's indicated to screen adults of average risk for colorectal cancer. Now, it's not a replacement for diagnostic colonoscopy or surveillance colonoscopy in high-risk individuals. And since it's not for high-risk individuals, such as those with a personal history of colorectal cancer and adenomas, or who have had a positive result from another colorectal cancer screening method within the last 6 months, then other means of diagnostic tests must be done.
Also, patients with other high-risk diseases for colorectal cancer, such as irritable bowel disease, chronic ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, or even those with a family history of colorectal cancer or certain hereditary syndrome, should be tested by other methods.
And as in most diagnostic tests, a negative result does not guarantee absence of cancer or advanced adenoma. And as in most tests, false positives and false negatives do occur. Now, for those of you who may not understand completely the terms false positives and false negatives, Carmen here is going to explain those terms.
When a test result is negative, but it turns out that the person is indeed positive for whatever, then this is a false negative test result. However, it is a false positive when the test indicates a positive result when it is later found that the true result is negative.
Hopefully that explains them. Cologuard in a study showed 13% of patients without colorectal cancer or advanced adenomas received a positive result. In other words, a false negative, while only 8% of patients with cancer received a negative.
Now, back to COVID.
I heard a statement from a physician prominent in the news that concluded a talk about the year's history of COVID-19 with a statement saying that we know less now than we did before at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. I believe that this is a misstatement. What we really have found out over the past year is that what we thought we knew, especially at the start of the pandemic, was based on previous history of other viral epidemics and pandemics, especially the flu. It would be like playing a game of poker without knowing the additional rules set forth at the start of the game. Maybe deuces or one-eyed jacks are wild, so we base our betting on the rules that we do know. After playing several hands, you may have lost quite a bit due to the fact that you did not know those additional rules. Well, now you know.
Over that time, different methods were used in an attempt to treat the virus, including the use of various medications, some that did not help, some that seemed to help, and others that helped, but only in certain circumstances.
Now, Eli Lilly and Company said on Wednesday that its combination antibody therapy to fight COVID-19 reduced the risk of hospitalization and death by 87% in a U.S. study of more than 750 high-risk COVID-19 patients.
In that study, they used a combination of two antibiotics, bamlanivimab and etesevimab.
It has not even been given a brand name yet, and that's because it's still an experimental drug. It has been used, again, in investigations to treat mild to moderate symptoms of COVID-19 in non-hospitalized adults and adolescents, and in those who are at high risk for developing severe COVID-19 symptoms or the need for hospitalization. But it has been authorized for emergency use by the FDA.
NSAVMAP is also an experimental medication presently being studied for use in treating conditions caused by coronavirus.
There was a previous study 3 months ago using a higher dose of both drugs, which reduced risk of hospitalization by 70%. It has already been green-lighted in Europe. The United States agreed in February to purchase a minimum of 100,000 doses of the combination treatment.
One researcher said the combination therapy has the benefit of offering greater protection against new strains of COVID-19.
That same researcher stated that they are very confident that this combo covers all the variants in the U.S. And he also said that the Eli Lilly company is studying an additional treatment for new COVID strains first identified in South Africa and Brazil, which have not become widespread in the United States.
Lilly apparently is prepared to manufacture 1 million doses of the combination therapy in the coming months and is in active talks to supply governments around the world with the treatment.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. Hello, I'm Dr. Harold Lasky. I have been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 34 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office.
We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains.
We are proud to welcome to Southside Medical Center Dr. Susan Pollan, MD, a board-certified pain specialist.
Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
Let me ask you, have you had any weird dreams during the COVID-19 pandemic? Apparently, there's a good chance that you have. Research has shown that people are really having an increase in the more disconcerting dreams since the start of the pandemic. Now, here are two nightmare scenarios that have been common during the pandemic.
First is of a swarm of small insects hot on your trail, and another concerns an invisible monster stalking you.
Those two dream scenarios were relatively common during the early days of the pandemic. Deirdre Barrett, a PhD and an assistant professor of psychology at Harvard Medical School, who studies dreams. She's also a former president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams.
During the first weeks of the outbreak, she launched an online dream survey and began collecting respondents' data.
And she's taken that research and put the results in her book called Pandemic Dreams. Her research showed that dreams associated with anxiety and other negative emotions have increased since the start of the pandemic, and that's not very surprising. The dream reactions were different in women and men.
Women reported lower rates of positive emotions and higher rates of anxiety, sadness, anger, and references to biological processes, health, and death.
Men reported increased rates of negative dreams, but not at the rates as high as women. When studying dreams, you really have to look at the consistency hypothesis in dreaming. What she means by that is the relationship of daytime concerns, which are often reflected in our dreams. For example, if you feel anxious or frightened during the daytime, and especially just before going to bed, those same emotions and related imagery are likely to turn up in your dreams. Remember those two dreams we talked about that showed up in many people's dreams at the beginning of the pandemic? The ones associated with insects and invisible monsters?
These are what Barrett called virus analogs, and this changed somewhat as the pandemic lingered. Later, during the lockdown, there were a lot of powerful images associated with isolation or loneliness.
An example of this was that People would dream about being imprisoned and locked in solitary confinement, or about being stranded somewhere alone in outer space. There was also a second theme in the pandemic as it progressed. This involved dreams about crowding or lack of privacy.
So the question now is twofold. Is it bad to have these dreams? And is there something that we can do to prevent or minimize them?
Michael Grandner, a PhD and an associate professor and director of the Sleep and Health Research at the University of Arizona in Tucson, says that stress, anxiety, and other emotions really do work their way into a person's dreams.
While this can be distressing, recognizing how the content of your dreams corresponds to your real-world experiences can also be illuminating.
Well, it doesn't sound that illuminating to me, but let's go on. Dr. Grandner stated that when we experience stress and anxiety, it means that we're going through something we need to process or at least cope with. So by dreaming through these stressful experiences, it allows us to learn what we need to learn and understand the greater meaning in the context of our experiences.
One of the treatments proposed by Dr. Barrett is for those people who have generalized anxiety or a similar psychological challenge to keep a dream journal or just pay more attention to your dreams, as this could help pinpoint the major source of worrying or other negative emotions.
You may be worried about the virus or about having to homeschool your kids, so dreams can help you identify the real cause of your anxiety. Nevertheless, dreams can be distressing. Dr. Barrett's advice is to think of what you would like your dreams to be about.
Remember that people are most likely to dream about whatever it is they are thinking about during the day, and especially what they are thinking about just before going to sleep.
So rather than watch the news or watch internet posts and social media feeds that generate the emotions of anger, worry, and fear, maybe you should watch a funny movie or a pleasant documentary about something that you really enjoy.
Perhaps you should have a photo of someone on your nightstand that elicits happy and pleasant memories, places, or persons. Let me give you some suggestions. Write a book, dance as exercise in your own home, even sing, make a song, a fun song, a happy song, massage your own feet with oil, cook on FaceTime, or share a YouTube experience with your friends. You can even travel across the U.S., Europe, or Japan, for example, on a trade on YouTube.
Barrett also suggested rehearsing happy endings to your distressing dreams. Now, this technique can be especially useful if you're having a recurrent and unsettling dream. Now, here's an example of this from Dr. Chris Winter. If you keep dreaming that you're trapped in a room with a group of sick-looking people, which is actually a very common dream, according to Barrett's, during the pandemic, you could spend the time before you go to bed imagining that room having an unlocked door that opens out onto some happy, healthy place.
And lastly, you can practice stress reduction techniques such as meditation, yoga breathing, exercises, and physical activity.
Last Sunday, daylight savings time started at 2 a.m. when clocks were turned forward to 3 a.m. local daylight time instead. While many consider the use of daylight savings time in the U.S. as beginning in 1916 with limited use, actually, Benjamin Franklin proposed a form of daylight time in 1784 in an essay titled An Economical Project for Diminishing the Cost of Light.
In that essay from the Journal of Paris, Franklin observed that Parisians could save on candles by getting out of bed earlier in the morning, making use of natural morning light instead.
And by his calculations, the total savings by the citizens of Paris would have been approximately equivalent to $200 million in today's world. If a group of bipartisan senators gets their way, This upcoming daylight savings could spark a permanent change, as they have proposed a bill that would keep daylight savings year-round, eliminating time falling back an hour in November.
The Sunshine Protection Act of 2021 was introduced on Tuesday by several senators from both parties, including Florida Senator Marco Rubio and Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey.
Several states have already passed bills to implement daylight savings as a permanent measure, but according to a memo from Rubio, a federal statute is required to enact the change. Along with giving us a delayed sunset, daylight savings time has been shown to have a number of societal benefits, including reducing crime, childhood obesity, and seasonal depression, as well as improving the economy and agriculture. Basically, there is absolutely no reason not to have daylight savings all the time.
As our Senator Rubio said in a press release, I am proud to reintroduce this bipartisan bill to make daylight savings time permanent and give our nation's families more stability throughout the year.
There are several advantages to having daylight savings time year-round, and we're not just talking financially. There are actual health reasons. Some are linked to the loss of 1 hour of sleep on the first day of the change, which can mess with our body clock and can trigger underlying health issues.
Remember, changing the clocks does not create extra daylight, but instead shifts the time of sunrise and sunsets. This time change can cause disruption to our body clock, otherwise known as the circadian rhythm.
A 2019 survey conducted by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine found that more than half of Americans typically feel tired after daylight savings time begins in the spring. Now, that's about 175 million sleepy people on March 14th.
The tiredness from losing an hour can be disruptive enough in itself, but for some people, springing forward may have much more serious consequences.
A Swedish study found that the risk of having a heart attack increases in the first 3 weekdays after switching to daylight savings time in the spring. Tiredness induced by the clock change is thought to be the main cause for the increase in the traffic accidents on the Monday following the start of DST. On Mondays after the start of DST, there were more workplace injuries, and the injuries were of greater severity compared to other Mondays. The start of daylight savings time has also been linked to miscarriages for in vitro fertilization patients.
Losing an hour of afternoon daylight after setting the clocks back to standard time can trigger mental illness, including bipolar disorder and seasonal affective disorder, with the acronym SAD, also known as winter depression.
A Danish study also found an 11% increase in depression cases after the time change. And an Australian study found that male suicide rates increased in the days after the spring and fall DST shift.
To overcome some of these body changes, with the changes in time, many have suggested some simple ways to counteract the problem, such as eating a healthy breakfast first thing in the morning. Food tells your body it's the start of the day.
You can go for a walk in the light. Sunlight and exercise have been found to adjust the body clock. And of course, you can help children adjust by putting them to bed a little bit earlier the week before the time change.
Here he comes, the doctor. Here he comes to see me. Here he comes, the doctor. Here he comes to heal me. Here I'm here to tell him all about my story. Here I'm here to tell him all about my pain.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com. HeyDoc.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana.
We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.